Welcome to I Finally Get It. This week we have Bill LoCascio with Fuselier Surveying and Mapping. Joining us in studio today, as always, Dustin Webb, our producer. I'm your host, Jeff Martin. Let's get it.
We talked about it with my business partner about lessons learned. And, you know, it's we've learned some things along the way, but I think we've been blessed in that we both started out at Fence Maker.
Yeah.
A wonderful firm. Probably still be there if I didn't have the opportunity to own my own business, but taught us a lot. You know, it was a good company, obviously been in business a long time, successful company. My business partner, Ryan Fuselier, he worked there as a division leader for a good time. So he kind of learned and he started that division on his own.
He was an engineer?
Yeah, he's an engineer at first. He kind of had a passion for the technology in our industry, surveying and engineering. He started looking into laser scanning and some of these other higher technologies that are used, and he got really interested in it and wanted to bring it to Fencemaker and introduce it and get kind of that service line going, Fencemaker. So he took it, ran with it. Obviously, you know, Fencemaker backed him and started a brand new division there. So he had experience, so to speak, starting a business within the umbrella of Fencemaker. So he had always done surveying on the side. So he got his degree in engineering, civil engineering from UL, USL at the time, but got his degree in civil engineering. But during the summers, he'd work as a land surveyor or work for his father-in-law as a surveyor. Developed a really passion for that. And so kind of did that on the side just to make a little extra money because he liked it. Well, he got so good at it, he started getting more calls, and got to the point where he just couldn't really manage that side business run things at Fencemaker, run that division at Fencemaker. So he thought, well, this was back in 2017, 2016. He said, if I'm ever going to do it, I'm going to start my own business. Now's the time. He went off on his own. Well, I was kind of his right-hand man and helped him a lot with running that operation over there. He told me, probably within the year, I'm going to give you a call, Bill, because, you know, I'd like you to come. I'm going to offer you maybe a little bit of the business, and or you know, bring you on as a partner, and you know, just let me know if you're interested. I'll probably give you a call in about a year. Well, 2 months later, he called me, and I was not prepared, as you probably know, Jeff. I'm not a risk taker. I was very comfortable with Fencemaker. I enjoyed my job, so I really had to pray over that, really discern about that. Much respect for Ryan. He was a wonderful boss, and obviously, you know, started that division, developed a lot of respect for him there. Trusted him as a business minded person. A guy who can make major decisions, make things happen. So I really had to pray over that. It took a few months to kind of discern, and I felt the call to go, and I went, and it's been great. And that was 2018. Ryan had already kind of got things up and running a bit. It was just him and a 2-man survey crew at that point in time. But he was smart about it to the point where when I came aboard, we kind of put our minds together and we decided we need to start, I guess, siphoning out buckets. So revenue, you know, so, and those buckets couldn't be touched only for the sole purpose of what they were created for. So for example, you know, general expenses, payroll, savings. So we would have these buckets set aside and certain portions of our revenue would go into those buckets and they wouldn't be touched. You know, unless a piece of equipment went down, general expenses, that's where that would come from.
Absolutely. Sounds like Profit First. Have you ever read that book?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it sounds like a Profit First take, but that's an incredibly smart way to go.
You know, the big picture, and I guess the point I'm trying to make is because we had that experience working with Fencemaker, working under some very knowledgeable people as far as how to run a business, we brought those lessons learned that they had already imparted to us into our business in starting our business. So we really have not been hit with any major oopsies and trying to learn from those, you know. We've been kind of blessed in that respect. It's about building relationships too, you know. So we've been blessed with having relationships from our time at Fencemaker.
Yep, no doubt.
Right. And obviously clients who enjoyed working for us. We never attempted to pull any clients. They're a major service provider for major industries. We're just, you know, we serve the community in small boundary work and that type of stuff. So it's different umbrellas of work, right? So, but anyway, so we had established those relationships. So we've been blessed by that in starting our own business. People have reached out to us. And so
you've probably seen the show, and I reach over when they have a light bulb moment. And there are actually two in there. One, relationships matter, right? Mm-hmm. You have the relationships, you continue building relationships, and that's so important for anybody to hear. But you guys, you waited to go off on your own after you had the experience that you needed to operate a business like this.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you, so many people, it's ready, fire, aim. And they take off because they want to own their own business. So they want to be their own boss. But you guys did the work. You put in your time. You gained the experience. And then you went out. You think that that has been a big deal for you guys?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, we've steadily been growing. You know, we like I said, Ryan started out in 2017. I joined him in February 2018. But, you know, with him and a two-man survey crew.
Yeah.
And now we're up to, you know, 21 employees.
21.
So, we've been steadily growing. And in this day and age, young people come out of college, you know, and this, it's not their fault. Society has taught them that, hey, you know, you come out of college, you're going to be making a ton of money, and, or, you know, people who are maybe have a passion for something will try to jump right into it without gaining that experience.
That's exactly
because
right.
There's this instant gratification that people expect nowadays.
You know?
So, I mean, if there's any wisdom to impart, I would think would be to find a company that likes what you like or a variation thereof, and then, you know, try to obviously get employment by them and learn from them and get the experience needed, and then get a foundation of finances set aside.
Yeah, correct.
And I mean, it's common sense, but
it's not common practice.
when you're passionate, when you just have this intense passion about something, sometimes, you know, you can't see the forest of the trees, right?
You
want to maybe step back and just try to gain that experience.
Great advice. Yeah. It really is great advice. So I want to go back because you are the one person. I know no other person that graduated from the Merchant Marine Academy.
Not many people do.
It's one of the coolest things out there. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your experience. So you grew up in Ohio, right?
Farm town, one stoplight town. Yeah.
Yeah. And you had the opportunity to go to the Merchant Marine Academy.
Yeah. You know, I did well in high school. I graduated co-valedictorian. Obviously you got to have a decent grades to get into a federal military academy. You have to be nominated by a congressman and go through all that. I had no intention of really entering the military, but their football coach started calling me, wanting me to come play for them. And then, of course, you start looking, and they tell you all the, you know, they got a sales pitch down.
Sure,
our graduates make within the top 5% of salaries and such, you know. And plus, you get to travel the world, and that was true.
Yeah, you definitely have to get to do that.
Huh? Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, my stories of my days at the academy, I probably wouldn't be married to Erica if I didn't have those stories to pique her interest initially because she thought that was so amazing. So, that was something I had not expected. Was going to be my path. You know, I was thinking going to a public university, you know, but
yeah, sure.
Went and played some football for a Division III academy, you know, and it's the, obviously there's five federal academies, military academies, and that's the one that nobody ever hears
about it, but it's a great opportunity.
Yeah.
So what'd you do after did you have to put in 5 years after that?
8 years, but it was in the Naval Reserve. So,
okay.
Yeah. And you really weren't obligated to do a weekend a month. You could, you know, but it was inactive Naval Reserve. So your obligation was 2 weeks a year, really.
Oh, okay. Got it.
I mean, that was a minimal obligation. And I enjoyed those 2 weeks. That was,
you know,
time away and seeing different places. I mean, I think I did San Diego Naval Air Station 3 times, you know, went to San Francisco once for 2 weeks, you know, so that it was kind of a minimal obligation. And then as far as your work life, you could enter into, cause I graduated with Marine Engineering Systems degree. You could really enter into any engineering field. You didn't have to work for the military you know, so it was flexible, you know, nothing obviously against the other military academies. I mean, those are great, great institutions. And obviously, you know, kudos to all those guys that go into the military active and all that stuff afterwards. Sure. But if there's one military academy, if you want to have the flexibility afterwards, the Merchant Marine Academy really kind of gives you that. So I enjoyed that. Spent 300 days out at sea, sailing the Far East, Hong Kong, Japan, Okinawa.
That's amazing.
You know, yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun seeing those places.
You said that that impressed Erica, right?
Yeah.
And so you're from Ohio and you ended up here in Lafayette, which is a different world.
Yeah.
So how did y'all meet over there? Was she in optometry school or?
No, we met before she went to optometry school. Okay. I got a job down here right out of college
and
school offshore company, went up to the academy. to interview a bunch of us. And they hired, I think, 3 or 4 of us. Mm-hmm. Came down here with one of my classmates, and I think he left within 2 weeks. He did not enjoy the offshore drilling experience on those rigs. But I did that for a year, and I put in time just to see, to test the waters, and realized it wasn't what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah, sure.
I missed my family in Ohio, so I moved back home, got a job there. But I came down the next summer to visit all the friends, because the people down here is not a cliche term, this is a Southern hospitality term. The people down here are amazing. And the friends I'd made felt like I'd known them all my life. So I made a commitment to come down here in the next summer and vacation, visit them. And I did. And it's a glorious story. I met her downtown at the sidebar.
That's outstanding.
Yeah.
She's a wonderful lady too.
But it was open mic night. So
Were you singing or was she?
No. She could have. She's got a great voice.
Yeah, that's great. And look, you've made a family here. Mm-hmm. I know both kids, and they're beautiful, wonderful kids. Mm-hmm. So let's get back to opening up the company. Because one of the things that I find fascinating are the people that have steady jobs. You even admitted, you're not a big risk taker. Mm-hmm. They had an opportunity. He wanted you to come on. You guys were doing this thing together. What was it besides trusting him that got you interested into starting this company? I mean, he just started it, right? But what was intriguing about it?
It was because of his leadership at Fencemaker that I developed kind of a passion or maybe just a likeness for the industry. I'm a math guy. I love the trig and the geometry of it. I love land surveying. Just kind of falls in my wheelhouse as far as how I think. So that was one thing. I knew I needed to have a passion or at least a desire to pursue this. And I did. But it's about trust. For me, it was just about trust. I trusted him. And honestly, I trusted that it was God's call for me to go into this. Yeah. So there were a lot of just discernment and prayer. Like I said, it took a couple months. And also, Erica supported it 100%.
That's huge.
Because she trusted Ryan, and she trusted that that's kind of where my path was going. And I've always had a thought of what it'd be like. I think I would like to be a part of maybe part ownership or owner of it. But I never thought I'd get to that point. I always thought I'd be a lifetime employee of a company just because I'm not a risk taker. Yeah. It would have to be the right variables for me to take that leap of faith. And it was. Mm-hmm. But probably what tilted the scales to me wanting to do it was the fact that Erica supported it wholeheartedly. Yep. She was on board.
What's been the best thing about the move?
The flexibility.
Yeah.
We all work from home. We're not a brick and mortar shop. Our field crews work from home. They work out of their trucks. I've been able to kind of be there for my kids, be there for Erica. Although I will say, the first couple of years trying to build this business, I was working a lot, but the fact that I was there, I was home, I was present.
Yep.
Cause I've always been one to work a lot of hours, at times unnecessarily. With me being at home, it allowed Erica, it allowed me to be present to them more.
Yeah, that's huge.
So that's been the best part.
Yeah.
It's just being there for them. And now that we've grown to a point where I've been able to hire a really good project manager who's handling a lot of my day-to-day stuff. And, I'm able to be there more now.
What's your role now? I know you're chief operating officer. What does your day look like?
I handle a lot of proposals and client interactions now.
Okay, good.
Whereas my project manager, he takes the project from award all the way through execution to the end. I mean, I'm still involved a bit in the end process as far as reviewing the deliverables before they go out and, coordinating with Ryan because he's a licensee. He has to stamp.
Got it.
So, but that's my next step is to get my license. So
as an engineer?
As a surveyor.
Surveyor. Very good. Mm-hmm. Okay.
PLS.
Mm-hmm. All right. How long is that going to take?
With my experience, it's hard to say right now. I got to get with Lapels in Baton Rouge. They're the people that kind of look over how land surveying and civil engineering is practiced here in Louisiana. I need to send them kind of my resume and all that I've done and see what they tell me I need to do. I'm probably going to have to take a couple courses, but
because I can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. So that's kind of the next step.
Honest to goodness, I did a little bit of research, and I know you guys do oil and gas, you do residential, you do commercial, but what is involved in both surveying and mapping? And I want to hear more about the laser stuff, because that's pretty fascinating.
Well, I mean, surveying and mapping, if you're a licensed firm, obviously you can map, but mapping is the capturing of the data and putting it onto, paper form and getting it, or PDF. Okay. Now everything's electronic, yeah, yeah, right? Exactly. So obviously there's several aspects of surveying. There's your standard boundary survey, or as simple as someone calling up saying, "Hey, I want to put a fence line up. I need my corners located." And we go out there and find their corners and stake them for them. And now they can tell the fence guy where to put the fence, all the way to, 100 acre surveys that are wooded. And we got to use aerial LIDAR, because we've got a fleet of drones that we have in our arsenal to deploy. We don't own an aerial LIDAR system. They're very, very expensive, still, but we just don't do enough of that work to justify the expense yet. We know how to do it. In fact, that's one of the things Ryan kind of initiated over there at Advanced Technology, with a lot of help from a lot of good people. He developed that service line over there at Fencemaker. So he knows all about the technology and had a passion for it. So obviously these LIDAR systems is, they send out lasers, and it reflects off the ground. It's light detection and reflection. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. And it reflects off the ground. And so you use LIDAR in areas where it's heavily wooded, because it can penetrate that vegetation. But we also can use a technology called photogrammetry. So it's a camera system that takes a bunch of still shots as it's flying. And then our software stitches all those pictures together and develops a mosaic of the ground.
Yeah.
And that is more used in kind of just bare earth situations with little to no vegetation, because it can't penetrate the vegetation, get down to ground surface.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, if you think about it, you're kind of just laying a blanket over the terrain. That's what it sees.
That is so neat. So, and it sees elevation too?
Yeah. So you can pull elevations off
that. That's amazing.
I mean, back in the old days, you had to send a crew out there and they had to walk. Usually you'd get what we call grid of topographic shots or ground elevations, and they'd have to walk through these trees and through these highly vegetated areas and just take a shot every so often.
Yeah, exactly.
And take days to do hundreds of acres. They would take days. Now you can go out and fly a 100-acre site in half a day and come back with the data.
Yeah. All through drones and stuff.
Yeah, through aerial LIDAR and mapping and photogrammetry. Yeah.
That's not cool at all.
No, it's cool. I mean, it's just like anything else. As technology gets better and better, our services can advance and cost efficiency goes up.
So what's next for Fuselay? You're just going to keep doing what you're doing and growing and get better?
We're planning for the future. We're trying to build our business to the point where maybe we can get into some oil and gas, heavier oil and gas services. There's hydrographic. We're not quite there yet. Bigger client stuff that we could be doing, but we just don't have the resources right now because we're still a small firm. So that's just kind of steady growing. But the economy hasn't been the best, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of put maybe a little damper on our plans, but inflation, everything has kind of affected us, but we're doing well, we're blessed, we're staying busy. We've got our crews working. So we're just kind of getting through this little rough patch with the economy and just see how we come out.
So do you feel like you could start another business after you've experienced this?
After you gain this experience, I could.
It's the experience.
I'd be more willing to, because I've done it now. The unfamiliarity and the scariness of the whole concept is not really there anymore. But you have to. I don't know what I do.
I love what you do, though.
I love what I do, and that's the thing. Yeah. You know, some people go into business because they're passionate about something. Some people go into business because they just happen to fall into a career path and gain a bunch of experience, and then they meet the right person that allows them to maybe want to conquer the venture of going into business. I think mine is kind of a combination. Mm-hmm. I graduated with an engineering degree. If you had told me 20 some years ago when I graduated that I'd be in land surveying, I'd be like, "What's that?"
Exactly. Yeah.
And now here I am. I think everybody's got their path. I kind of developed a passion, not knowing that this is where my path was going to go. I developed a passion for surveying, and it helps to have had the experience with the right person, the right mentor to help you and teach you along the way. You have to be mentored by someone who has a deep passion for it as well. Otherwise, if it's just a job for them and they're not passionate about it, then you're not going to. So if you do have a passion for something right out of college, if you're young, you have a passion for something, obviously, your relationships with others with that same passion will help build you into an opportunity that maybe you can own your own business too.
Yeah, I love what you said, though. Everybody has their own path. And the truth is, if you had asked you that when you were coming out of the academy, you would have said, what's that, right? But now looking back, doesn't it all make sense?
It just kind of
pieced it all together, and and here you are.
And that's the thing for me is, as I've gotten maybe a little deeper in my faith, I've realized how there's been a pulse and a little finger on my path. Someone kind of in the background guiding.
So. Yeah, no doubt about it. Who would you say has been your biggest inspiration? Because look, you're really disciplined, pretty conservative in your approaches, right? Mm-hmm. Who instilled that? Was it your family?
So my dad was a blue collar guy, worked for Ford for 44 years, very loyal, hard worker. So he's, as far as a dad working full time, coming home, dog tired from his job, working on, on the rail yards and loading vehicles in 2 feet of snow and, working under these trains, hooking cars. I mean, he worked hard to the point when he walks, he's kind of hunched over. He just put his body through a bunch of, physical, and then he would come home every day, cut the grass, help us do stuff. I mean, he he's always kind of been my inspiration as far as work ethic and commitment, and loyalty. My mom is very practical. Great mother. So I guess it's just fact is, it might be a little cliche to say, but my parents have been a major inspiration in my upbringing.
Absolutely.
And kind of teaching me who I should be as a parent and as a person who's employed, as a worker, just take pride in my work.
Yeah. I love it.
My business partner as a mentor, he's inspired me, in many ways. Throughout, not only my time working for Fencemaker as his, as a right-hand man, but also through this business, building this business. So
you come in contact with a lot of people. How do you try to leave people different and better just because they met you?
I think it's just the old mantra, you treat people how you want to be treated, with respect and dignity. You don't want somebody walking away from you thinking that, you didn't really care for that conversation. You didn't really care for their presence, or, you were bored, or you thought you had better things to do, or you pushed them away because, throughout high school, throughout college, it's something that I learned from my mom is that, you always want to treat people as you would want to be treated.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So, I try to make people feel like their concern, the point they're trying to make, the reason we're in this discussion, the reason that they've come to me is the most important reason to me. Is the most important thing to me at that moment. It's not being disingenuous. It's not being fake. It's not trying to, but we all have our own concerns and, are tied up in our heads at times when people are talking to us and they can see it. They can sense it.
Thanks for tuning in to I Finally Get It. To learn more about Bill and what he's up to, visit our show notes. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you're an entrepreneur and you have a light bulb moment that would help another entrepreneur, please reach out to me at jeff@ifinallygetit.com.